Welcome to episode 12 of F-Stop, Collaborate, and Listen with host Matt Payne. Today's guest is probably doesn't even need an introduction. He's one of the world's probably best landscape photographers and appeared on the podcast due to popular demand from other guests. His name is Alex Noriega. Man, we covered a lot of great topics, including copycats and compositions and kind of the state of landscape photography in general and how that ties into social media. We talked about how Alex finds inspiration in the field and kind of what he shoots for and what he looks for when he's out there getting shots. It was a great conversation, and I think you guys are going to love it. Please drop by and rate the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks, and hope you enjoy the podcast. Yeah, so Alex Noriega, dude, it's pretty awesome to have you on the podcast. Every time I ask people who they want to have on the podcast, your name comes up pretty much every single time.
Oh, well, thanks to those people, I guess.
Yeah, dude, and of course, I've been a huge fan of yours ever since I started landscape photography back in 2011. Because I think we had the same camera. You had the D7000 for a while?
Yeah, I was using that for a while.
Yeah,
I still have some portfolio images from it.
Yeah, I think one of them's still one of my favorite images there. I think it's called Voltaic Force.
Yep, that was with a 7100, but yeah, pretty
close similar. Enough. But yeah, man, I've been a huge fan of your shit for a long time, and I know you've also got a really chill demeanor about you because I've had a couple beers before. So yeah, I've always I thought it'd be cool to have you on, man.
Sweet. Well, I'll try not to put everyone to sleep with the chill demeanor.
The chill demeanor, like the jazz voice.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a funny story, which I know I sent you the story when we were talking over Facebook. But do you remember when we were hanging out in Brian Kibben's car with your girlfriend? It was like right before you were, I think maybe you had just moved or right before you moved to LA.
Yeah.
And Kibby like wouldn't let us out of his car because he wanted to record all of this auto tuner shit.
I think that was my car, but I think he like.
Oh yeah, it was your
wanted
car.
Wanted us to stay in there so that we would listen to this little rap he made on like an app that auto tunes your rap or something.
Yeah, dude. And it was like. The only person who thought it was funny was him, but he wouldn't let us leave.
I thought it was funny the first one that I heard.
That's
ridiculous. But they're all kind of the same.
And then he kept playing one he has like 30 of them he saved or something.
I love that guy though. He's so funny. Oh,
he is hilarious, man.
I don't have a good time when I'm hanging out with him.
Absolutely. Have you ever seen photos of him and Paul Bowman's kid?
I know them both. I haven't seen photos of them together.
So I guess a couple years ago they went to I think it was like up in Canada or something, and like Paul's kid kept getting like behind him and like making humping motions and stuff, and Paul would get like photos and video of it.
That sounds like those guys.
Yeah. Oh my god, just ridiculousness.
Yeah, man, I didn't remember that about the thing in the car until you brought it up.
It was just so awkward.
It was funny though.
Yeah. So you're back in Portland now?
Yeah, I've been back here since last year.
Nice, nice. How you liking it?
I love it. I mean, I just keep coming back. This is the third time I've moved to the city, so
yeah,
I'll stick around for a while.
What part of Portland are you in?
I'm in North Portland.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I lived at 33rd and Belmont.
Southeast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems like a nice area. I know Bellino's down there somewhere.
Yeah, he's like in Woodstock, I think.
Yeah.
like further down south. But yeah. So shit, man, we got like a whole fucking list of topics to talk about.
All right.
Let's
I
just
don't
jump
remember
in.
anything that I wrote. I'm
It's
gonna
all good. It's all good.
hit me with it.
So one thing I know for sure about you, just based on your photos, is like almost all of your photos are super unique in terms of composition and location, and I think that's one thing a lot of people really like about your work, other than your sick processing. But I wanted to talk to you about like how you felt about people, doing repetition and copying other people and chasing icons and all that kind of shit.
Well, we're jumping right into it.
Jumping right in, man, head first.
Well, that's a complex subject, I think. There's a lot you could say about it, but I will say that not all of my photos have always been unique. That's just something I've been striving for the last few years. I think when I started out, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people, I wanted to kind of recreate the photos that were inspiring me or create
Sure.
something similar.
Absolutely.
So I'd look at someone like Mark Adamus or Ryan Dyer early on and like, yeah, I want that. I want that bold, like really nice emphasis on the light, like just something that'll knock your socks off, type of look. And then if you don't know a place, you're gonna probably look to other photos for ideas on where to go.
Right.
I mean, I know a lot of people don't do this full time, and so they don't have infinite time to go research every location and find everything for themselves. So it results in a lot of copying in the end, I think, because you end up going to the same spots, and there's some very, you already have a composition in mind because you saw someone else's photo there, and you can't get that out of your head, and you kind of get tunnel vision for that, or there's just maybe it's a limited location where there's kind of one comp that is clearly the best.
Right.
If there's not a lot you can do with the spot. And I get all that. I totally do. But that said, I feel like in the last 5 years, it's become more prevalent to just only do that and never really progress beyond that. I don't really see like a desire to create something unique or put oneself into the photo, coming from a lot of people nowadays. And that's something that I think like 5 years ago, I saw that a lot more. Like,
Yeah, totally.
whenever someone would go to a new location, they'd be so happy to show this thing they got that was different from what everyone else got there. And a lot of those go on to become icons. But I just feel like people are just happy to get the icon now, like the shot. It's kind of like a trophy hunting or stamp collecting mentality.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but I just, it doesn't interest me. Like I don't, I'm not very, I look at a lot of photography. I look at a lot, and I have been doing it for years, just day in, day out. And I just, when I see the 100th photo of a place, like it doesn't matter how good the processing is or how sweet the conditions were, like I don't feel like that person did much other than show up once they've got those like technical skills in check,
Right.
if they're copying the same composition. So it just doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't, it's not the kind of photo that's knocking my socks off anymore like it did when I started, because now that I'm aware of like who's shot what and when and how long these photos have been being made.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this topic. I talked to with David Thompson about it for a while too, and sometimes I wonder if it's just part of where kind of different people are at in the process of becoming photographers. 'Cause, like I feel like when I first started, like every photo I looked at was new. Like, oh, what's that place? What's that place? I want to see that place. And now that I've seen like you said, like the 20th photo of Horseshoe Bend or whatever, like you're like, yeah,
Oh,
that's
you've only seen
great.
20?
Like today, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, no, that makes
yeah.
more sense, yeah.
But like, I guess I feel like Maybe some of that's just because of how much photography we look at, and how like, cause I don't know, like, it's a pretty small place if you think about like what's shootable composition wise. Like, unless you're
You mean
doing,
Horseshoe Bend in particular, as an example,
I was just thinking like,
or like the US, or
yeah, the U.S. I mean, it seems like it's not, but if you think about like what are, I don't know, if you go to like Eagle Creek, for example, like near Portland, you know, there's only, well, now there's zero compositions of Metlako, but you know, like there's really only one spot you could take a photo of that falls unless you wanted to go way to the top.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like some of it's just because locations have been found and you only can really shoot those locations a couple different ways.
Definitely. I think, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off if you had
No,
more to
no
say.
worries, bro.
I think that the gorge is a little bit limiting in that, most of the shots are found along certain creeks, right, where they're accessible. They don't require a lot of bushwhacking, and there's falls along the creek. And then, in order to even fit a waterfall in your field of view, you need a fairly wide lens. So it's hard in the forest to get any farther away and use a longer lens. So there are some constraints in that example, like where I can totally see why a lot of the photos coming out of there are similar. And then color-wise, like it's pretty much always green, like
Red or yellow.
whether or not you have light coming in from the top is like the biggest difference in conditions unless they go in the winter. It's just there's not a lot of variance there unless you start looking for smaller scenes on the forest floor, or if you're focusing on just the water or some type of intimate or abstract. But yeah, I get it. I feel it for those locations, and that's what I was saying, especially with Metlako. You said not anymore because the platform collapsed, right?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah. I've never even been there, but I had only ever seen the one shot of it. I know Mark Metternich actually like paddled in and got behind it or something. That requires a lot of work and planning, obviously, so not everyone's going to do that, but that's kind of what I was saying when I was qualifying my statements, just
Sure.
with certain locations are kind of limited, and I understand, like, but and they're beautiful to be at. Like, I won't deny that I loved seeing Panther Falls for the first time or whatever it is in the gorge, but photographically, the result doesn't interest me. So I
Well,
often go to those spots and shoot something, and if I can't come up with something that's me, then I'm just not ever putting anything out. I just went there and had a good time, but I'm not trying to force a photo out of every situation.
sure. So what kind of approach do you have now to find locations that that you want to shoot?
That's a little tough. I spent a lot of time on Google Earth, honestly, and looking at maps.
Yeah, me too.
I just love seeing, as my buddy Alex Modi put it,
No, I know Alex.
father time and mother nature freestyling is how he describes like some of the geology in the Southwest, and that stuff has really been inspiring me the last couple of years. It's so crazy. Like, it looks like an alien world. And at first I was into mountains, and I still love mountains. I love being in mountains. They're a great photographic subject. They can be so dramatic, but like, it's not that weird. I don't know. It feels like Earth, but some places in the Southwest, some of that geology really could be an alien planet if you didn't know.
Oh,
Like
absolutely.
if we had imagery of other planets, you might not be able to tell it apart. You might not know that that's like, it's just so crazy. So that really interests me because geologically it's inherently unique. And then there's just so much to discover there still, I think. I know you said that it's kind of limited, and on the surface, yeah, like you look around Horseshoe Bend and like, oh, obviously the big giant bend where the river goes around, like that's the prominent thing in the area. But then tucked in every like crack in a canyon is a slot canyon, and that's how all those got found. You just have to follow every wash or tributary up until it goes in the canyon, and there's crazy slot canyons like hidden away, but from the outside they look like nothing.
Right.
And that stuff is all over in the Southwest. The Southwest is full of hidden treasures that, like, even with guidebooks, you could not experience it all in a lifetime because there's still so much to be found. And then as far as photos go, I just think that it provides a lot more unique opportunities because you're not trying to photograph something as large as a mountain or, like, as constricting as the waterfall conditions that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Just more opportunities to be different present themselves, I think. So that's really been my focus the last couple of years.
Yeah, I feel like every time I go into the desert, I'm like overwhelmed with like composition ideas, like, oh, like it's almost too much to shoot, you know, like it's crazy.
and often the thing with the desert is that it doesn't present itself so boldly, you know, like if you go to Mount Hood or any volcano in the Northwest, like if that's your intended subject, it's pretty obvious how you're gonna shoot it and how you're gonna frame it generally. You just have to find surrounding elements, right?
Right.
So, because it's just one mountain, it's gigantic. What else are you going to do unless you're not trying to shoot the mountain, which is fine.
Right.
But with the desert, like, it might look like just an endless expanse of dirt. But if you start exploring it, then behind that corner or in that canyon, there could be something insane. And I also think it just the raw display of geology encourages you to look for patterns and smaller scenes. They may be really large, but just not something with an obvious subject and a sky and just the formulaic composition.
Yeah, I rafted half the Grand Canyon back in March, and you know, it's, as far as photography goes, like, it's pretty remote. Like, there's not a lot of people that have taken a camera in there, I feel like. And, or maybe they haven't, I just haven't been paying attention, but but I found like all kinds of really cool stuff. Like, I found this spot about like half mile from our campsite one night that was just like filled with these huge cactus, and like I was like obsessed with trying to get a shot of all these cactus with the canyon walls behind it and stuff like that. Like, I don't think I came away with anything too crazy, but it was still fun just to like find stuff.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like you're saying, like every around every corner you find something really weird or cool that's, it's like, oh, how can I shoot that?
And it's part of it is just the way that canyons work with light. Like, they can create situations that aren't just color at the edges of the day, you know, like the way that light might reflect down a canyon or create a silhouette of something with the bright wall behind something dark or reflect in the water or whatever it is. Like, it's just a little more interesting to me to find something crazy going on than with, say, a mountain, where the best light is generally going to be at the edges of the day because that's when it's most directional and the mountain's so high, like, you're not, it's just catching the best light at a certain time, unless there are atmospherics or clouds that let through a spotlight or, and that's another thing, like, mountain photography or big scenes are just so dependent on conditions that
True
I feel
that.
Like, it's more like reacting to the conditions around you, and that can create amazing photos, it can produce amazing results, but
it can also produce
it's
some
a different
frustration.
Kind of, yeah definitely. It's a different kind of interaction from the artist, though. It's not actively seeking and arranging your photo, it's more reacting. Which is a skill in and of itself, and I've certainly like missed great light and great things happening because I was not in the right mindset or not looking in the right place. Like, you can mess it up, but it's just, it's more capturing and less creating, I think, at least for the wide angle kind of standard shots.
For sure. Although, like, this last weekend I was up like 12,000 feet here in Colorado, like, just I near my campsite, there was like three or four, like 12,800, 13,000 foot peaks, and like every night I climbed a different one, and then the last night I was there, I found this I got to the top of this one, and like the light was actually looking pretty good for sunset, and the clouds were looking pretty good, and I must have spent 45 minutes wandering around like 300 or 400 foot radius trying to find a composition that would, you know, that would be interesting, not just like here's the side of the hill and the mountains over there and some clouds. Like it took me forever to find something that I liked, and like I could have just gotten, you know, I could have just set my tripod up on the top, and which is probably what I used to would. I used to would have just done that. I would just set my tripod up on the very top and taken a photo.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I was like trying really hard to find like really interesting elements on the ground, like rocks or flowers or weird, you know, like patterns or whatever, like you're talking about. And I feel like some of that's just like experience and curiosity, but some of it's, you know, like you're saying, I think the Southwest and the desert provides a little bit more opportunity for that.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about mountain geology. It's a lot more chaotic, like boulders and just rocks falling, as opposed to just pure erosion on display in the desert, which tends to create more patterns.
Yes.
But that's not to downplay like a good composition in the mountains. And certainly if you're climbing the peaks, like you're putting in a lot more work than 99% of the people, and you're going to get a really interesting view, because how many people ever see like a full mountain range from the top of a mountain?
Right.
Unless they're flying over it.
Yeah. Like,
it's a difficult thing to get up that high on foot. So I definitely respect that. And I have shots planned like that too. This month, actually, I'll be in Wyoming in the Wind River Range. I've got a shot at about 12,500 that I planned, and I couldn't do it last year because it's 2,000 feet above camp. I just wasn't in shape for it, but I'll do it this time.
Yeah, that's about all I do now is, I mean, well, it's how I got into photography to begin with, was mountain climbing and then, you know, just taking my camera with me. And now it's fun to, like, climb smaller mountains that have views of the bigger mountains.
Yeah. I mean, that's why everyone shoots Tom, Dick, and Harry, right? Or they shoot Hood from TDH.
Yep.
Little mountains surrounding the big ones are often the best views.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. I still love mountain photography, and I love mountains, and I love backpacking and all that. I just have generally been more focused on the desert as of late. It just is easier for me to come away with something that I feel is unique.
So let's talk a little bit about the importance of light. And I don't know, you said in your email to me that processing won't save a turd.
Which did I write that? That sounds
you
like
did, yeah. which I thought was hilarious, because when I was in Monument Valley, I guess that was last month or the month before now, I was down there with some people, and we kept talking about Ryan Dyer and creating something out of nothing, because I think he has a video that says creating something out of nothing.
Yeah, that's his most recent video, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was funny that your email said you can't create something out of nothing. So talk to me about that.
Okay. Well, first of all, Ryan can definitely do that. And I'm not saying that he does with all his photos. Like,
sure.
He's a great artist and highly
respected. Absolutely.
I think he's using that as a teaching tool. And I tend to do that too. Like, I choose photos
that aren't exactly the best,
that I think the final result is good, but that the raw files require a lot more work on, so that I can demonstrate more techniques. And I'm sure that that's what he was after too. Like,
absolutely,
if you're creating something out of nothing, you're doing a lot more. You don't want to try to teach with a file that's good out of camera, because you're not going to see that much done to it, and it's more just instructive to show all those techniques on something where you have to polish a turd or whatever. And it might not be a turd, it might be a great composition and just bad light or whatever. I was more referring to bad compositions with bad light or just boring light. Like, I've seen a very common overarching like reverence for color in the sky. Just color.
Yeah.
And it's like look at this sweet sunset I got. I got such sick light, and it's just color in the sky, but there's no light, like, on the landscape.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you captured color in the sky. Where's the light on the landscape? Like, that's not interesting to me because I see it so often and on so many photos. It's just show up at an iconic location or a very formulaic composition, like 2/3 land, 1/3 sky, and the sky is red and automatically it's good. Like, it's just, for me, that doesn't do it. I need some light on the land. I need something interesting happening with it. And I see a lot of people trying to create an interesting result in terms of the light, or they try to compare it to another photo with good light, and they're like, I got good light, why can't I make my photo look like this? Well, actually, didn't. You just got color. It's not the same thing. Like, it's a lot easier to enhance and emphasize light where there was some. It doesn't have to be crazy. You could make it look crazy. But if there was no light, if it was just color in the sky and you don't have very many reflective surfaces like snow or water, and it's just kind of like a dull light on the land,
yeah,
it's difficult to pull much out of that. But if you had a little bit of light, like soft light on the land, you can definitely emphasize that to a great degree. So that's kind of what I'm referring to when I say polish a turd. It's just trying
that's
to...
That's funny, man, because it's so funny. When we were in Monument Valley, like, there was one night where there was actually... Everyone was saying, like, oh, my God, the light was so good. And it was just that there was a lot of color in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I feel like that's, like, the golden chalice of landscape photography for some people is, like, having colorful clouds. Like, I know I get upset. Like, if I know there's not going to be any clouds, I'm like, eh, I don't think I'm going to shoot. There's no clouds. But I like what you're saying about, like, that's not always what's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at my personal favorite images, I'm looking through them right now. Just
like, yeah, I was looking at
a rough count. Like, I would say only a couple of these have what you would call like a crazy sunrise or sunset. Most of them are.
Yeah, I was going to say like three.
Yeah. And a lot of them don't have a sky in them at all. A lot of them have light, like the Rainier one, but not color in the sky. And that's partly how I process that. But it's just not that interesting to me, like capturing pink or red above everything. You know, it's it's kind of one note. And I certainly appreciate when that happens. I'm like, oh man, I have to capture this. I still have that instinct. But it doesn't always end up being a very interesting photo or one that holds my attention for long. I've got a few shots like that that aren't even on the site anymore because they just weren't doing anything for me. That initially they did when I captured them a few years ago. And now it's just doesn't hold my attention.
Yeah, I noticed you have a lot of kind of more abstract type shots on your site. And I don't necessarily know that you've always kind of had a taste for that based on what my memory tells me.
It's fairly recent.
Yeah.
Last couple of years.
How did you kind of get into that?
I think that when I started in landscape photography, like I said, I had a desire to copy guys like Mark Adamus, just like that bold, not that Mark's shots are overdone, but the things that people try to copy all the time, I was doing the same thing. And that was driven by a genuine love of the place. Even if I didn't know it yet, it was, I see a photo and I'd be like, man, I want to be there. That's what this photo makes me feel. I want to be there. I want to see this. And I want to create something that makes me feel the way that I feel right now looking at this shot. And that's perfectly valid. And that's how I felt then. But after I did that for a few years, I just kind of stopped feeling that way about a shot like that. It was more, oh, here's another one. Like, I did it again, but that doesn't really... It's just it's not me in the photo, you know. It was just
It just didn't speak to you.
Yeah, it was just doing, it was going through the motions. It was doing what I thought I had wanted to do from the start, but that was before I had seen 10,000 photos or however many I've looked through, you know. And now the abstracts are just a way to create something unique, something that's mine. And that's generally, if you look through my favorites, what you'll see.
Yeah.
There are a couple, like Toro Weep, that's just an amazing place. Like,
right.
You know, there's much different you can do there.
Right.
My shot's a little different. Blue sky, like stormy instead of colorful, which I think is a nice contrast to the red of the canyon, but a kind of similar comp to a lot of them there. And that, I just love that place. That's really awesome. You can shout there, and you don't hear the echo back for 7 seconds, because that's how wide the canyon is there. And you can look 3,000 feet straight down. That's taller than the tallest building in the world. That's crazy.
It is crazy, man.
Just, it doesn't come across in the photo, but the photo reminds me of that, so I like it.
Yeah, that place is like, if like people have never been there, like it blows your fucking mind.
Yeah.
The scale of it is just unbelievable. I mean, it's like Toro Weep's cool because like if you've ever been down to the bottom and seen how big that river actually is, like Toro Weep makes it just look like a tiny little
a little strip.
Yeah.
Especially with a wide angle lens, but yeah, even with your eyes.
Oh yeah, totally. You're like, oh, and there's the river down there, the Colorado River.
Yep. No, it's just a little guy. It's just also the little guy that created this magnificent canyon.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy if you sit there for a while too. Like at first I was very scared to go up to the edge, and then once you get comfortable with it, you don't really think about it anymore, and it's very, you kind of lose that sense of scale. But if you step away and come back, then you get it back, I think. Anyway, shots like that, like you'll see a couple of those that are among my favorites just because of the place. But generally I want these shots, like my curated portfolio, to be me. It's something that no one else has, or something that I've done in my own way. And yeah, when I was starting out, that used to be like, oh, I'd go to an iconic location and shoot it at twilight instead of at sunset. Like that was my thing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing like the twilight star blends. But that's just not different enough. That's just different conditions, but doing the same thing. I really want these to be totally different. So
do you feel like that's what drives you right now as an artist, is to set yourself apart from other people, like as a unique thing?
That's kind of what helps guide me in terms of what I'm releasing.
Okay.
But it's not really driven by other people. It's still from within. Like I have a love and like a fascination for like the geology of the Colorado Plateau, and like the majesty of mountains and dramatic light. Like I've had that for as long as I can remember, way before I got into photography. But yeah, I'm definitely thinking about like, is this just the same thing that everyone else has done? Like if it is, then it better be really nice. Otherwise I'm not going to release it. So if you look at like my new work, I don't think I have almost anything in there except Toro Weep in the last year that you could call iconic. It just hasn't been my interest as of late, so.
Yeah, and a lot of abstract stuff too.
Yeah, and some of that is, a lot of people didn't know those were aerial, because I didn't say in the initial post, because I didn't want the talk to be about like, oh, did you use a drone or is that a helicopter, or talk about equipment. Like I just wanted people to talk about the shots, but I think a lot of people thought they were small until I mentioned in a later post that they were aerial. So that's interesting to me, just knowing the scale of those shots, which you can't really get just by looking at them.
Yeah.
But I wanted them to stand on their own without knowing that. So
yeah, I don't know if you know Kane or not, but my buddy Kane,
I know of his work. Yeah.
Yeah, so we went out to Monument Valley a couple months ago, and on the way there we stayed a night, just the two of us, at Mexican Hat. And there's this feature, I think it's east of Mexican Hat, called the Navajo Blanket. And it's like this really interesting, it's the side of this mountain that looks like a Navajo rug. Like, it has all these like angles and colors, and it just looks really
Flame
cool.
kind of formations that
Yeah,
look
yeah,
kind of like
yeah.
flames.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that the
And
shot that he released recently?
oh, I don't know if he did it. Did he finally put it out there? I got to see him take it. Like, he flew his drone like 5 miles or some crazy shit over the top of it, like right before sunset, and like had it pointed at this really funky angle, and like it just looked so fucking cool. Like, I was super jealous because there was no other way to get that shot than to have a drone, but
Right.
it was so cool.
And aerials are one way that you'll find me railing on the idea that equipment makes your photos better. Like, I hate being asked, what camera did you take that with or
Oh yeah, me
whatever. That's
too. It's
pretty,
just
yeah.
Polaroid.
And like, I don't worry too much about gear, even though I've recently been able to upgrade to some nice stuff. I mean, like we were saying, the D7000, 16 megapixels, that's still plenty to make a big print. It's
Absolutely.
still plenty to get your vision across. Like, sure, if it was 36 or 50 megapixels, you'd be able to make a sharper print. But like, if you take care with the techniques you're using on whatever gear you have, you can make good stuff. It's
Yeah,
not limiting you,
absolutely.
except in certain circumstances, like the Aurora or Milky Way or something that's like
Right.
stretching the capabilities of the sensor, or maybe you don't have a wide enough or long enough lens. But for the most part, like, I wouldn't say that gear is going to make anyone's photos better. But aerials, that is a completely different perspective, and it's just not seen from, 3 to 6 feet off the ground, like almost every other photo. So
Right, exactly. And
it's
it gets you perspectives that you'd never be able to see.
and scale. You can really see something huge and fit it into the frame, something that you wouldn't see from the ground. I mean, that's really interesting to me. So that has been a focus for the last year.
That's fun. Well, and it's probably a good way to, I guess, kind of spark your creativity too, is to have that whole other tool in your toolbox.
Yeah, and it's just, I do agree, it's a little like, drones are annoying, helicopters are expensive, and like, there are downsides to it for sure. You can't just get out there and be in like a quiet place contemplating once you're actually flying. But it's just a crazy tool, and what else are you going to do to get that shot? I don't do it when other people are around at all. I don't think anyone's ever heard me flying, because I don't want to disturb anyone's time in nature, and I also want to be in remote enough places that there's no one else around anyway. So,
That's cool,
but it's
man.
just,
I really respect that, 'cause I think the stuff people get with drones is pretty amazing, but like you said, the downside is that it can be pretty disruptive. So I super respect that you have that in the back of your mind.
yeah. Well, I mean, it annoys me when I'm using it. It's just, I'm too enthralled by what I'm seeing that I let it slide. But yeah, and you can't do it in national parks either, so you have to start thinking outside the box, outside of the normal locations. And that's kind of, I've been poring over maps for a long time in Google Earth, like even before I was into photography, just kind of enthralled by geography and geology. And it kind of plays into that, because you can use that to scout and
Yeah,
find
absolutely.
your perspectives and then go do it.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would have loved to have had a drone this weekend to be able to like fly it up to the vantage point of the mountain I climbed before I climbed it to see if it had the view I thought it would have.
Right?
So
That's, dude, when I was talking about that shot in the mountains,
yeah.
that I've got planned, I luckily have a buddy that lives in Colorado at elevation, and it was no problem for him to hike up there. And I had scouted it out on Google Earth. I'm like, I know there's this shot up there. I know it's going to look awesome. And then he was going to go up there with me, and I just couldn't make it. I was already at 10,500 feet, like hiking like 10 miles in there. Like, I couldn't go another 2,000 up. But yeah. He went and did it no problem, and he shot it on his little point and shoot. He's not a serious photographer, but he does what he can, and he came away with a sweet shot. Like, he definitely scouted it out for me, and I was thinking, like, if I had a drone, I could have just flown it up there, because you do have height restrictions, but if you're within 500 feet or something of a structure or a wall, like, you can be 400 feet above that. So, like, you could fly right up against the mountain all the way up and just scout, like, 1,500 feet up.
Yeah, totally. It's and, pretty and it would be amazing. Legal,
just as far as that's concerned, but...
Yeah, it's definitely cheating.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was thinking about getting a Mavic and bringing it there this summer, and, like, I think I could get the shot without hiking up 2,000 feet, but I also kind of want to just be up there, and I want to get it in a higher resolution, and it does feel like cheating, and I don't want to lug 4 batteries into the backcountry, so...
Right. Yeah.
Like, definitely a tool to augment, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. The stuff you can get with the right conditions is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about social media and the current state of social media. How are you using social media, and how do you see it playing into what you're doing with your work?
Well, I think that I'm probably not using it enough. Like, I don't think I've posted a new shot in like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I did a bunch in January, and, well, a bunch for me, like 6 shots that I all shot in California in January. And I've been on a little bit of a hiatus and just kind of planning and biding my time, waiting for summer and fall. I have some plans. So I haven't been using it as much as I should. I know that if I wanted to grow my business the most I possibly could, I would always be posting. But if I don't have new work, there's only so many times I want to repost things before I start coming out with new stuff again. I don't want to keep pushing the exact same images on everyone too much.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how, I don't know, what you're saying resonates with me, because I feel like, I don't know, like, there's this emotional weirdness for me about social media. Like, I don't want to just repost old stuff, which then forces it. But then, like, on the flip side, it forces me to put out stuff that's not my best. But then it's like, but if you don't put stuff out there, then people won't see your work. It's like this weird, like, you're fucked either way.
Yeah, I've just learned to get over the reposting thing a little. Like, not everyone sees a shot when you put it out. Not everyone's on social media that day, or
right,
maybe they weren't following you at the time, or maybe just they didn't see it because reach is severely restricted on Facebook and Instagram, or they didn't see it because no one goes on 500px anymore. Like, there are a lot of reasons someone might not have seen a shot the first time you put it out. So I definitely, my best work, I want to make sure it's seen. And if that's the best thing I have, that's what I want to present. I don't want to put something subpar out there. So right. I'll definitely repost, but I try to come up with a theme to the post or some extra thing to go with it, like a little write-up about something that these images illustrate, or maybe like they're all of one location or one type of subject. But and as a promotional tool, like if I release a new video, I'll definitely have a string of posts, like some of them repost, just so that I can consistently get the word out that there's a new video or whatever it is.
That makes sense.
But for the most part, I'm so restrictive. I'm so picky about what I'm releasing that I'm just, sometimes the well is run dry, and if I'm not out creating, then I don't have anything to post and I just don't do it. So I could be using it more, for sure, social media, but it's not that important to me because I feel like I have a following established, at least.
Yeah. And
whenever I do have something new, they'll see it. and I'm just trying to create something good, like too high standards, so hopefully that will help it be seen whenever I do release it. But that's on the topic of reach. There's a lot more that can be said about social media. I think that what we were talking about earlier with the copying and the iconic images and just not really having an adventurous or original idea or drive with your photos. Just not you or me, just in general,
new wave
of people, or just the general state of things that I'm seeing now. I think that's all linked to social media, because I think that, like I was saying, 5 years ago, people were trying to come back with something unique. I think when they were coming back, they were putting it on like a small forum like NPN,
yep,
or Flickr, which, you know, was like 500px back in the day, but still like smaller scale. And I just feel like more thoughtful comments were given then, and that encouraged more thoughtful shooting. And it was a good cycle. Like, I really liked that. And it certainly helped me when I was starting out. But now it's just with Instagram and the way that Facebook reaches and the way that 500px evolved, it's just so based on likes and popularity and just something that stands out in a thumbnail or on a smart device, very small. It just seems like there's not much thought put into it in general anymore, at least not to the degree that there was.
But isn't that kind of a product of how we're wired as people? I mean, because, you know, we like shortcuts. We like, you know, the thing with NPN and all that back then is like, if you wanted to be good, like, you had to put in the work. And nowadays, I feel like, you know, it's this weird, like, cycle of you're like the third or fourth person I've interviewed that's kind of brought that up. But it's funny because we're also feeding people more information at a faster rate where it's more accessible and they don't have to do as much to get it.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I think David Thompson was saying in his interview with you, I did listen to that one, something about how you can go buy all the tutorials now and take a workshop, and like, you're way further along than you could have been in that amount of time back then for that amount of money. And like you said, it was harder to be good then because you had to put in more work. I think that just depends on the definition of good, though. If you're saying that it's easier to be good now, it's easier to put out images that are like decently well done of an interesting subject with a good composition. But the problem is that it's most likely someone else's composition, and the processing or the artistic style to the processing may be very similar to a previous artist just gleaned from tutorials. It's just less unique. And I guess that's mainly how I would qualify good nowadays, is uniqueness, or the how well the artist is actually speaking through the image, as opposed to like whether it's technically good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I totally agree with everything you're saying. I guess where I'm landing in all this, though, is that it's like, isn't providing those workshops and not, I mean, I'm not like, you need to make a living, right?
Yeah, I see where you're going with it. I'm definitely feeding into it. I've been trying more and more to be more selective with the number of workshops that I do and the techniques that I teach. Like, I used to teach things that now I would absolutely not recommend anyone do. And that's not because it's a bad practice. I just think it's lazy. Like, I used to teach how to make sun stars, for example, in Photoshop. Uh-huh. And I could make them because people wanted that Canon 16-35 sun star, but if they didn't have that particular lens, their sun star didn't look anywhere near as good. So I found a way to fabricate those in Photoshop just completely make them from scratch, and I taught a lot of people how to do that. It's just now, like, that's never going to make a photo good. I don't think that has anything to do with how good your shot is, no matter how much it leans on a Sunstar. It's only, like, a nice little flourish, and the fact that it would be fake would kind of turn me off now. So I don't teach that to people anymore.
Yeah.
And that's an example of, like, how I've tried to dial back how much I'm feeding into this thing that I'm laying into.
I'm also
doing fewer workshops because I don't, it is conflicting to, like, have such a respect for the land and feel so terrible when I see special places start to get overrun, potentially
right.
destroyed. Like, I don't want to feed into that. And I definitely, I guess, was part of the problem with workshops, but I'm just trying to do less of all that. And I'm focusing more on the processing videos, which are lower impact, you know?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it's still, if anyone that bought my video emailed me with a question on why they couldn't make this photo look good, like, if it was a turd, I'd still try to gently tell them that, like, you need to focus on composition and light also. I'm not going to say that the video will just make your photos good magically, but
for sure.
So yeah, I'm trying to be more honest about that side of it and more true to myself, I should say, in terms of what I feel. But you do have to make a living, so there's some conflicts of interest there for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said it, because I've personally struggled just thinking about that topic, because it's this weird thing that kind of plays into itself from both sides, and you, if you go too far one way, it doesn't do anyone any good.
Yeah,
and it's hard, but it's hard to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be gentle if you're talking about people's art. You, I think that people are a little too sensitive nowadays. I think David was talking about this a little bit, about the critique online and stuff like that. Like, in the NPN days, you could totally have your image ripped apart, and that would make you a better photographer if you were willing to listen, because those guys generally knew what they were talking about and had some good things to say. And sometimes you just get tunnel vision when you're working on your own image, and you don't really see it from someone else's perspective. You may not see things that other people see. So it's good to get outside feedback, especially if you're learning and you don't have an extremely strong, like, artistic vision for where you want to go with something. I just feel like it's harder to give that kind of critique nowadays. I feel like people are very sensitive. And I don't know if that's part of the social media, the general way that social media has gone, with all the likes and the back padding. Like, people just expect that, and anything even remotely negative is all of a sudden mean-spirited to them. I don't really understand it fully.
It's part of it's because people haven't had to go through that process before. Like, you know, people, I feel like in the late 90s, early 2000s, like, that was the only way you got better, is you got your images ripped apart by other people. And nowadays, you get better by, like getting a Skype lesson, or, like, taking a workshop, or, like, I feel like it's easier to get better without getting your ass handed to you on an online forum.
And that's, I guess, playing into all of this is the lower bar that I feel like people have. Like, people are happy to just come home with a shot that is bold and has color and is that composition that they saw online. Like, it just checks all the boxes for what they liked about the shot they saw.
Right.
It's not their own, really. It's just that's what they wanted, and they went and paid what they had to, or did what they had to get that, and now they have that. And there's not, like, a drive from within them to improve and do something that speaks from within. It's just recreating to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I feel like the people that do that don't last.
Right. That's true. I think that to last in this arena, you need to, at some point, find your own artistic voice and start doing something that's you, or you'll right, just blend it, in with everyone
gonna
else.
They're just going to be bored.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I went through a stretch like that when I lived in Oregon, actually. Like, I didn't really have a whole lot motivating me to go out and shoot. And now that I'm back in Colorado, like, there's places that I want to go that no one else has taken pictures of. And like, I don't care if the light's good or not. Like, I'm in a spot that no one else has been, and it's fucking cool.
And that's, man, you just have to be, you have to be willing to just be at a place and maybe not get a photo. Like,
absolutely.
Trying to force a shot everywhere you go or every trip you make. I understand it because people work 9 to 5 and they can only get out on the weekend, or they have wife and kids or whatever it is holding them back from doing photography. I understand if you're on limited time, you just want to come back with something. But if you're really trying to have a go at this and like make a name for yourself or whatever your goal is, like, you have to do more than just force something out of every situation you get into. You have to like be able to curate and self-curate and understand when you didn't get something and just enjoy that you were there. So
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
I think that's been a huge part of my own improvement, is just allowing myself to not get a shot, because if you're focused on just getting something, you'll probably do what's easiest just to guarantee that you get it. Like, if sunset's coming up and you don't have a composition of your own, you might, okay, well, I'll just go do the iconic one and just try to make it a little different. And then it's not really that different, the final result. It's just a little bit changed, but it's not you. Whereas if you were willing to really give up that sunset and potentially not get anything, you could explore something way different. And maybe you wouldn't get anything at all. It's not guaranteed because it's not made for you already, but it could be something fantastic. There's just a risk. So there's a risk every time you go out if you decide to look for something unique.
I like it. I like it, man. That's a great philosophy to have. I feel like, oh man, if people just live by that, they'd be in such a good place, because I feel like it's so easy to fall into that trap of like wanting to produce an image that someone will like. Like, so many people fall into that, and I think it limits people creatively. Like, they don't go out just wanting to be curious about the world and see things that interest them and speak to them, and then ultimately that'll speak to other people, I think.
I agree. And even if it's not like, even if it's unique but not necessarily as strong of a composition, technically speaking, as the one that someone else did before, it does get a bump up just from being unique. And that doesn't mean that anything unique is good. Like, certainly you can't just go shoot some patch of dirt and just say like, no one's ever shot this before. This is unique. This is awesome. Like, it's not automatically awesome, but,
right.
But you're just more likely to find something that really stands out, an image that will speak to you over the years and hold, stand the test of time. And
yeah,
it just, it takes a risk. Like, the, one of my first, Dune images, there was just this crazy sunset going off overhead. It was like extremely red, and I just completely ignored it for this other composition I had found that was totally me.
That's so hard.
It's still one of my favorite shots. It's a telephoto shot, but you can see the red light reflected from the sky. Like, that's what gives the dunes their pinkish purple hue in the shot.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a dusky looking light, and that wouldn't have happened if that crazy sunset wasn't overhead. But I did have to ignore like an obvious but bold shot in order to get this one. And this one is one of my favorites, and I don't think it would have been if I had gone for the wide shot with like a single curve leading in the foreground or whatever you would do.
Right.
At the dunes. So
is that,
I mean,
the,
it was just a
Nocturne of Shadow. Is
yeah,
that
that's that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So
yeah, that's so hard to do, man. Cause like, I don't know, I get distracted by the shiny, pretty light sometimes.
Oh, me too.
Not
for
sometimes,
sure.
Almost every time.
There's something about being a landscape photographer where you just get this pain in you if you're not capturing good light when it happens.
Yeah, you almost feel like you're like being naughty or something.
Just like you feel a need to, like, I'll even pull out my phone. I'm like, what am I doing? This is a phone. The file is going to be garbage, like, especially on such a bright sky.
Right.
It'll have to underexpose so bad. It'll be so noisy. What am I doing? I'm not going to get anything out of this, but I just have to capture it anyway.
It's like, I have to do it.
Just like while my camera's focused on the real composition, then my phone's like, oh, I got to get that sky while it's there. I don't know why. But but it's just, for me, it's been about showing restraint and not, like, making the photo about that and releasing the photo that's about that.
Yeah.
I still let myself go crazy in the moment or appreciate it. But
absolutely.
I've gotten more tolerant after seeing like where my favorite images come from and seeing the types of situations that produce my favorite images and seeing that it's often unexpected and it's not something as easily planned as a crazy sunset going off overhead.
Right.
I've been more comfortable letting that slide and just enjoying it, which I think is what normal people do when they see something like that. if I'm in a restaurant and I see a crazy sunset going on outside, I'm not like, oh man, I'm out there, I'm missing it, because that's happening over the city. Like, what would I do? Take a picture of a building with that over it? Like,
right.
I'm not missing anything. I just have to enjoy it. And the same thing goes for if a crazy sunset's happening at Trillium Lake. Like, the most that you're missing out on, if you don't shoot it, is a picture of Trillium Lake that looks like every other picture of Trillium Lake.
Right.
No offense to people that like those shots, but...
Yeah. No, it's funny. I don't know if you follow Ron and Sarah.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're good friends. I love talking to those guys.
He put out a blog post, I think yesterday or the day before, like... I don't just take pretty photos anymore or something like that, but it was basically kind of about what we're talking about. Like,
yeah, we've talked about that subject late into the night before. Ron and Sarah both are inspirations for me.
Cool.
I love what they're doing with their photography, and they've been doing it longer than I have, but they've got just crazy portfolios built up. They've got so many images of that nature, like unique, abstract, intimate patterns. Like, they're really good at that, and I still think of them when I'm shooting those scenes sometimes.
Yeah, I know for myself, I have an absolute no eye for it at all. Every time I go out, I try to see it, and I'm like, I just don't see anything there.
it's hard. Well, I mean, you still have to come up with an arrangement, you know? Like,
you do, yeah.
Ron comes away with sweet shots of, like, pine cones and needles on the ground, and, like, I'll just walk over that stuff.
And you're like, what is
him walking over shots that he would have made awesome. But it's not like he just recognizes it and points down and that's it. Like, he's still coming up
with looking for it,
really balanced arrangement and all that. So, yeah, definitely takes some skill.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, about his posts, like... Yeah, I definitely agree with what he was saying. And it's not that he's trying to tell anyone else how to shoot. I think that it was interpreted that way by some people.
I didn't take it that way.
No, yeah, neither did I. But people that maybe were guilty of some of the things that he was disparaging were not happy with the post. And I think that they were taking it as, like, dictation. Like, he's telling people this is how you should shoot. I don't think so at all. I think that when someone speaks their mind about something like that, they're trying to inspire others, at least Ron. I mean, he's definitely got a positive tone throughout. He's not telling you that you're doing it wrong and you can't do it that way. You can't go shoot icons or whatever. He's saying that maybe you should look for something more and you might be fulfilled by it. And I just thought it was weird to see, like, this kind of backlash for something so positive to me.
Yeah, I don't know. The internet never ceases to amaze me.
But that's kind of what we were talking about with social media, like, criticism and the likes. Like, people just expect likes and backpats and positive comments only, and they never want to be challenged on any view. And it kind of reminds me of... Trump supporters.
Getting political.
No, I'm not going to talk about that specifically, but just like the the mentality that that if you criticize the president, you're all of a sudden like anti-patriotic.
Oh, and, right.
And, like all this, like just they can't take any criticism, but then they call everyone else snowflakes. Like right. It's the same sort of thing, I think, where people aren't able to be challenged on anything or have a debate anymore. There's no discourse, like, in the landscape photography community. I feel like it's much more focused now. Like, you'll have great discourse on a post by someone like Ron or David Thompson or whoever else is speaking their mind. People like that. But you'll also get a lot of, like, whiny backlash for just speaking your mind about something like that. And all you're saying is that these icons, like, there's more out there. You know, there's something else you could be finding other than quote unquote the shot. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I see people that can't take criticism, and I think they feel so terrible when they see a post like that because they know they're guilty of some of those things. Maybe I don't, and it's not guilty. Like, it's not like you're wrong. It's just, maybe they feel disparaged, and I just feel like that's an opportunity to learn and open your mind rather than get upset. So I see a lot of that in social media now. That's part of the thing about the scene.
No doubt. Well, shit, man, like, I usually ask two final questions, and I feel like you kind of already answered one of them, like, but I'll ask it anyway. You can see if there's anything else you want to add. I always ask people, like, based on the title of my podcast, F-Stop, Collaborate, and Listen, what does that mean to you, and what kind of advice would you have for other photographers?
Yeah, I sort of did answer that, at least the listen part. I think that if people were able to listen to criticism on their photo, critique, I should say, not just straight criticism like, this sucks, but like, hey, I think this element is distracting and you should consider removing it, or like, the balance would be better if you had done this in the field. I think that people aren't willing to accept that they didn't come back with an image that they like. Like, if someone took a trip to the Northwest or the Southwest or somewhere popular and they came back with all these images and then they were critiqued, people made suggestions on them, they'd be like, well, I already made the trip. These are my images. Like, I can't change that, so I hate you. Like, it's not, maybe just accept that the shot isn't as good as you thought it was and try again another time.
Right.
Take it as a learning opportunity. I feel like people aren't willing to listen in that regard. So,
do you feel like there's a good forum for that, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's tough. Facebook would be a great forum because everyone is friends on there, like pretty much every photographer that I'm friends with. And I have like almost 1,000 pending friend requests too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know these people, but like, even without that, without those friends, I still have like 200 friends in common with almost every other photographer on my list. Like, there's definitely a community and these people all recognize each other's names. Like, it would be a great place, but I think maybe it's just too broad because there are too many of the people that aren't willing to listen or engage in discourse mixed in with the more thoughtful people, and just they don't gel very well. I feel like that would be a great place, though. I mean,
obviously, man.
Like, everyone can comment and see the comments and join in on the discussion and can post photos, and like, the infrastructure's there. It's just,
maybe we should create a F-Stop, Collaborate, and Listen Facebook group where we
groups,
post photos
yeah.
and get critiqued.
Groups are a good spot to do that. I just show my images to my buddies, like my close friends who are photographers, before I release, if it's something that I am not sure about. Like, I have people that I trust, and that's part of it. Like, you don't want just some guy off the street coming and saying things about your photo, because you need to be able to trust his opinion or
right.
her opinion. And like, the reason that I trust these people's opinions is because their photos are good, or I respect what they're doing. it's not to say that
they have a good eye or something.
Yeah, it's not to say that everyone that ever's told me something about one of my photos would be right, and I'd have to listen to it. Like, I definitely right. I definitely want the opinion of someone that I consider to have the same values or goals, or to at least understand what mine are, and who has a good eye. So, yeah, I think small groups are a good way to do it. NPN used to be great, man.
Yeah, that's what people keep telling me.
Flickr was great when it was early. Like, even now, actually, Flickr's kind of fallen so far by the wayside that it's a very small forum again. Like, you can post a photo on there and it can get on Explore, I guess, is their way of, like, doing a front page. And it can get seen by a lot of random Flickr people that way. But for the most part, it's just your followers, and not that many people are on Flickr anymore. So I feel like I get decent commentary there, like more thoughtful comments about the actual image, and not just like beautiful, great, pretty, just like whatever.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I actually I don't always post to Flickr. I try to post to Flickr once every 9 days, because that's. You talk about being explored. You can't be explored more than once every 9 days.
Oh, okay.
So, I did all this research on the algorithm, and
yeah.
So I pretty much now, if I post a photo on Flickr, it gets explored, but that's because I've kind of figured out how it works.
I gotcha. I was wondering where that came from, the rhyme or reason behind it. Because I'll have some photos that get thousands of favorites, and then some get 100, and it's not related to the photo. It's because of whether it was explored or not. But I don't know. I just throw the photos up on there. I don't pay attention. I probably should, but
yeah. Okay, so my last question, man.
I didn't tell you what f-stop means or collaborate.
Oh yeah, go for it, dude.
No, I mean collaborate would be along the same lines. People should just. Have discussions and discourse instead of getting all whiny and retreating and blocking people and then going and making passive aggressive posts about what they saw. Maybe you could just have a discussion and share ideas. Anyway, F-stop, we all know what that is.
Do you think there's any value in creating a Facebook group for people that have been on the podcast?
For people that have been on the podcast, that would be 15 people so far, but it'll keep growing.
Yeah, but I mean, for that purpose, to collaborate and, get critique.
I think that would be cool. I would check it out. I'm always interested in giving critique, just because I think that that's such a huge part of the artistic process, is self-evaluation, and I don't have that many photos. I'm pretty selective on what I shoot, so I think I have a lot more in me than I can only use on my own photos. You give me extra photos to critique, I'm like, oh yeah, now I can talk about the composition and all this stuff that I would think about on my own if I had any more.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Cool, but yeah, I've been thinking about something. That might be fun.
I've been in some small private critique groups before, and they're pretty cool for a while. I mean, I like the vibe. I think part of it gets down to people being busy and never posting, and then other people don't like critique and just throw their photo up and expect everyone to just like it and not ever say anything about it. And just the dynamics can be weird because it's so intimate. But yeah, I mean, I'd be down to check one out if you made it.
Okay, I'll think about it. See if I can get a few other people to join in on it. Because I think in order to keep it active, you need enough people to post and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Well, can't be 10 people or whatever.
Yeah, a little too small. But
yeah.
Well, let me know what you think of there.
Okay.
What was the other question?
You said yes. That too. So if you were subscribed on iTunes and it said, this person is now up on the F-Stop Collaborate and Listen podcast, who would you be most excited to hear about or have on the podcast?
Probably my favorite landscape photographers. So I don't know how many of them would be interested in doing a podcast or whether you could get a hold of them. but I would say like Guy Tall is maybe my favorite photographer. I would listen to any interview by him. Hans Strand, Art Wolf, Floris van Bruegel, Alexandre Deschamps.
Yep.
Michael Fatale. He's kind of an old school guy. I don't even know like if you could get him on the internet. Franz Lanting. He's a Nat Geo photographer. Might be too busy in Antarctica or something. Those people are like my top shelf. Like, I think they are fantastic artists, and anything they had to say, I would listen. Not to say that my next suggestions aren't top shelf, but maybe more realistic in terms of getting a hold of them. Like Sarah and Ron, I would listen to anything they had to say. Alistair Benn, he's over there in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
I bet you could get a hold of him.
Doesn't he run the one, what was that site?
He ran YTake for a while.
Yeah, YTake.
That was actually, to get back to a previous topic, that was a really cool little photo sharing site that somehow, without a curation, like without judges curating like on 1X, anyone could upload whatever they wanted, but somehow it was extremely high quality. Like, you almost never saw a bad shot on there. It was all very thoughtful. It just attracted that kind of people. But the thing is, I don't know if he was hosting it in Europe or what, but it's just always really slow, and I think that prevented a lot of Americans, at least, from using it. And then it had like file size restrictions, like and resolution restrictions, and it's just, you can't do that stuff anymore, I don't think. Like, you can't make someone make another JPEG for one site, or they're just not going to upload. So that might have helped kill it, but I don't remember why he shut it down, but that was really cool. The thing is, it was so small. He almost never got any commentary going, but just for looking at images and inspiration, that was fantastic.
Nice.
So Alistair Benn, Jack Brower, he's over in Colorado.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Maybe you could meet up in person.
I've been talking to Jack off and on for years. Like, he's definitely one of my favorites.
He's fantastic. I mean, if you ever look up any Colorado or San Juan's location and you're looking on Google Images, you'll see like a bunch of snapshots, and then you'll see a really, really good shot, and that's usually Jack's.
Yep.
And then let's see. I don't know. I mean, those are a lot of people that I would like to hear from. I would mention my friends, but I talk to them all the time, so.
And they're probably already on my list anyway.
Probably.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, it's